I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The slugging left-handed batter, Rizzo, lines one down the right field line. Fair ball all the way to the wall. Zobrist is in. Bryant with those long strides, racing around third, heading home. The relay to the plate. Bryant scores standing up. Two-run double. Anthony Rizzo, Cubs lead 2-1.
Yesterday on the score, Anthony Rizzo's two RBI double. And we're getting closer and closer. We're just 11 days away from opening day for the Cubs. They'll be in Texas taking on the Rangers. So we're going to go out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 per month, and bring in Mark Gonzalez, covering the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. You follow him on Twitter at MD Gonzalez. Mark, I appreciate you getting up for me this morning.
Oh, no problem. Big day today. St. Paddy's Day. Should be a big crowd out there against the Rockies.
So is it a little more chill out there for St. Patrick's Day than at least what you read about and hear about back here, where it's just kind of a show of sorts, we'll put it as? Like, is it a little more controlled out there?
Not really. Not really. And I'm glad I'm doing this at 6 a.m. because I've been around my share of St. Paddy's Day in Old Town Scottsdale. And let's just say it could be a little dangerous. So I'm happy to be on this road.
Well, I appreciate you being on. So looking in the paper this morning, read your piece on Albert Almora. And I think he's just so interesting as one of the guys leading into this year, because I feel like so much of all the things that we talk about are just so relevant to Albert Almora. So what was your main takeaway speaking to Albert and the other guys about him and his role starting the year?
Yeah, he's a guy they all pull for, but how many times can you pull for him? Because Joe Maddon has said, I got to play everybody. I got to spread out the at-bats. Got to give the playing time in the outfield accordingly. And yet he seems to make that a set. And I think a case in point was Friday. He gets the big two-out RBI single, the opposite field, which is a big issue with this team, especially with the situational hitting. Second pitch of the game, hits a home run. You know, we all know about his defense. He hasn't had to really display it too much out there this spring, but that's okay. And he's running a little better. Now, how that translates to the regular season, I don't know, but he keeps putting himself in a better position for more playing time. So that's going to be interesting, especially since there's been a mission for this team to get off to a fast start.
And he's so intense. Like, I remember when he went up to the booth to go talk with McNeil and Parkins, and he had just come out of the game. He was 0-for-3 on the day. You know, figured it's not that big a deal. It's just the one spring training game. But he clearly was still mad about the game and also just very focused, very intense guy, to the fact where everything that moves around in terms of lineup, in terms of playing time, as you mentioned, I know they all say the right things, but to you, does it seem like that's something that affects a guy like Almora more than some of the other guys that are in the clubhouse?
I think it's offset by the fact that he has so many guys supporting him there, that when he sits, he's still getting the pat on the back. And the flip side is, he's involved helping that guy that's starting ahead of him or playing ahead of him. So if he's upset, he hides it pretty well.
Talking with Mark Gonzalez here on the Score, Cubs beat writer for the Tribune. Follow him on Twitter at MD Gonzalez. And then I'm reading your notes from yesterday, and yet again, Tyler Chatwood. Didn't necessarily think he'd be someone we would be actively talking about, you know, this close to opening day for what his role is, but he really seems to be carving out a role for himself, or at least forcing a role for himself on this team.
Yeah, that was the big test yesterday, coming in with runners on base and no margin for error. And he threw strikes, and there was not any, you know, pitches that missed badly. I mean, that, I think that's the key as well. If he can be close to the strike zone, he's got a shot because he's, the guys are putting the ball in play, you know, not the greatest contact, and it's paying off. Or at least he's trusting his defense more, and his guys are more in tune. There were a couple of crazy plays, especially one in the final out of the inning where a guy rips a shot off Bryant's glove, but it stays in the air, and Baez is there to get it. And, you know, you keep your defense involved, keep him sharp, work fast, throw strikes. You got a better chance than last year when he was walking a lot of guys, bouncing a lot of pitches, and really testing his defender's patience.
So what's the trickle-down effect in the bullpen, then? If he's kind of solidified himself as at least, I would presume, your long guy, more likely than not, what does that do to Montgomery, and then how all those others dominoes fall in the pen?
Well, it's a good point you make because, you know, when the Chiefs in Montgomery, he might be more important to this team right now as a left-handed specialist because they've really had trouble with their lefties this spring. You know, Dunsing started off well, gave up a couple homers about a week ago. He's got to get righted. But then after that, it's been rough. I mean, Randy Rosario hasn't been the same as he was last year. The hits are off of Marjorie very hard. You know, they sent up Mike Zagorski yesterday. Kyle Ryan's an interesting study. I mean, he had a great year in Iowa. They put him on the 40-man roster. You know, he's a long shot to make the team, but, you know, still going to keep an eye on him. He's still in camp. But as it relates to the bullpen, I mean, I got to think, you know, Dunsing's going to be on there. And then, you know, Montgomery might be your other lefty. But other than that, then I think it falls into place pretty well with, you know, Carl Edwards Jr. and Cechak and Brad Brock and then Strope at the back end.
So with Brandon Morrow being out as long as he's going to be out and the state of that bullpen, have you gotten any indication or just kind of logically thinking that as much as starters aren't necessarily pushed to go further early in the season, that might just have to kind of be the necessity at the start of the year? As you mentioned, the Cubs want to emphasize a good start and also just kind of settling the bullpen without Morrow.
I think that's my feeling, that the starters got to go at least six now. I mean, and it goes hand in hand with the offense. I was looking up some stats yesterday and I saw where out of the first 29 games, they scored 3 runs or fewer in 17 of those, which
wow,
really puts stress on Joe Maddon early in games where a pitcher might be pitching well, but he's got to pull him for a pinch hitter in the fifth or sixth inning. Then you have to go to your bullpen. Now that's a lot of stress on the bullpen. And with a 13-man staff, you don't have that depth off the bench to pinch hit. And, you know, Lestelle's not here anymore. So, it's going to be an interesting situation, but I still think that the starters must go deep, and I think they want to. You know, they know that their pitch counts were pretty high in games early, and it had a trickle-down effect where they just had to be pulled after, you know, 90 pitches in 5 innings.
Talk with Mark Gonzalez here on The Score. So, as of now, does it look like the Cubs are not actively looking at the moment for other backup catcher options and are just fine with Victor Caratini, or are they still actively looking around the edges to see where there might be an opportunity to upgrade?
There's just not many good backup catchers out there right now. I mean, a couple of scouts tell me that backup catching is very, very, very hard to find. Although, you know, I was kind of mystified somewhat that Rene Rivera, who was here 2 years ago, is probably going to be the backup to Posey in San Francisco. And I figured, you know, he might have a better chance here with the Cubs, but I mean, he's been promised other things, you know, and given the fact that, you know, with Posey's knee and hip, he's going to need days off, and you know, with here, you got Wilson as, you know, Iron Man, essentially, as far as catchers go with his durability. And Victor, also a switch hitter, can play, you know, third or first in an emergency. So a lot of moving parts there, but I think right now is they feel that Victor is capable as a backup.
Am I wrong in being a little surprised that and you just mentioned the versatility of Caratini being able to play a couple other spots as well, just that with what's been thought of as the framing and just the receiving being more of an issue for Contreras, that the backup isn't necessarily even if it's someone that really can't hit a lick, is not someone that more complements what Contreras does than a similar type profile player?
Wilson's, attempting to get better there. So I think that's step one. And step two is, Caratini works well with Hendricks, works well with Hamels. I mean, we're not into a special catcher, personal catcher situation yet, but I think it does help that there's some potential for playing time be ingrained where Victor can stay sharp and not burn out Wilson like I think what happened in the second half last year. I mean, 1,109 and two-thirds innings led the majors, and I just thought that was crazy. But, Joe felt that, he led the league in innings caught because he is the best. So, I don't know. I still think he needs more rest, but, Victor's going to have to make that step forward.
I don't know if this really matters at all towards winning, but just from back here, hearing everybody speak, and at least especially in terms of guys like Chris Bryant, leaders on the team that are just more outspoken maybe than they have been earlier in their career, it feels much more like it's a true veteran team, even though obviously most of the guys are still as young as they are. Is that the way it seems to you? And just does that matter at all towards winning?
No, I think it does matter because I think, the last 2 years, these guys have had, it's been unfinished business. I mean, they wanted to repeat as World Series champions. It didn't happen. I think you can understand that. I mean, just going through the rigors of your first World Series season and taking it to Game 7, I mean, we finished in November. I mean, these guys were pretty fatigued coming into spring training. Now, last year, a little different. People say, well, you won 95 games, don't feel bad. But, it's like golf. As Ozzie Guillen always said, you play to the field. And the fact is, they had chances to put away the Brewers, didn't do it. And I think now these guys see that, the window might be tightening a bit. They know now that how special and how hard it is to win a World Series. And I think they're becoming more assertive. So I think it's a good thing that they see the carrot still dangling there.
Gonzo, I really appreciate the time, and you're making time for me this morning. So survive all the bullets here on St. Patrick's Day.
All right. Take care.
That's Mark Gonzalez. Once again, follow him on Twitter at MDGonzalez, writing Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. Great stuff from Gonzo. Always appreciate him making time for me on a Sunday morning. Yeah, I was wondering what it would be like out there. Because, when you live in this city that's, got the Irish population that it does, you wonder how different it is from places like out in Arizona where it's just, is it again actually celebrating, or is it more or less just here's another reason to keep drinking for maybe a couple extra hours as opposed to not? I already know I'm feeling old because I was in bed a lot earlier than I'd like to admit the last two nights, not even just coming in here in the morning. Friday night, yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting old, man. I'm a lot older than Eli, that's for sure.
I'm still with you, though. I went to bed around 3 on Friday because I was doing some work stuff. Okay. And I wasn't drinking, but I was doing work stuff. And I feel like in the last 3 years, that was the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's just, it's not my scene anymore. I think I exhausted that in college and then shortly after college. But, hey, I'm in my 30s. I'm, got the job now and getting ready to have the mortgage hanging over my head in the next couple weeks. I got that coming. So I'm washed at this point. I guess I'm just washed. I have to come to grips with it. But what we're going to do is we're going to take time out, come back. I have some odds and ends stuff the rest of the show. We'll definitely get back to talking about the NCAA tournament. It's Selection Sunday. So I asked early in the show just how you consume the tournament, what you care about, how you make your predictions or picks or whatever, and what you care about when you're watching the games. Just more basic, because it's one of the times I know for myself that I let myself just kind of go. But when we come back, there was an epic bit of inadvertent tanking yesterday. So we're going to talk about that in one of the weirdest finishes to an NBA game that I can remember recently. And it's with two
weirdest
teams.
Finishes in NBA, any sporting event I've ever seen.
It's incredible. It really is. So set that up. We'll let you hear from the broadcast because the call is fantastic too. So we'll do that. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. That's when Nick Schipkowski and Anthony Herron are on from 9 to noon. This is The Score. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until the top of the hour. That's when Nick Schipkowski and Anthony Herron will take over till noon. Herb Lawrence and Kevin Zipak after that until 4. David Schuster bridges the gap to Bulls pregame. Bulls at Kings. And then after that, I see him on the other side of the glass right now. And then he's going to be back here tonight. It's Eli Hershkovich along with Jordan Stone breaking down the bracket, seeing how all the matchups work, who got priority in terms of where they went. I think that's going to be a real interesting part of it too, especially for who gets the number one overall seed. I think that's going to, it's going to be real interesting. I would hope it's Duke.
Yeah, will be Duke. Futures too, though. A lot of people wonder, should you bet the money line on each team? And by what I mean by when I say that is, should you bet game by game on a team you really like going into the tournament? Or should you bet on them as a future as a whole to win the title at, let's say, 33-1 for Houston, for instance? I'll give listeners a little hint there. That'll be discussed as well.
Yeah, so that there's a lot of angles to go to with the tournament. Eli and Jordan Stone will have that for you from after the Bulls game, so probably around 7:30-ish until 10 o'clock. But I mentioned it before the break, and so I had bet this game, put it on my picks. I always put picks, you know, more often than not, and I post them on Twitter at RickCamp670. So I was following, I'm probably one of the few that was following Suns-Pelicans yesterday. And when you're just following, you know, the game cast of it, you don't quite understand what's going on sometimes. So I'm going to just play this from the Pelicans broadcast of what happened. Now, the setup is there's 6 seconds left. New Orleans is up by 3 in overtime against the Suns.
Got a foul. Why haven't they fouled? Jackson for the tie. Why didn't they foul? 1.1 to play. Am I missing something here? What a gift. Pelicans have to bring it in. There's no timeouts left, guys. Let's play. Tied at 136. We're going to double overtime. Alfred Payton has it. Joe Prunty and those guys are still on the floor. There's no timeout, supposedly. How do they call a timeout? We'll get an explanation, I think.
It's a technical foul?
Now, is it a technical?
So then why are they giving them the timeout if they don't have a timeout?
Play. They're discussing it now. Both teams are out of timeouts. There's confusion, obviously, among the three that we're looking at right now.
Hey, listen to this. If Phoenix now gets a free throw because that's a technical and they didn't get the foul, what a horrible way
to lose.
They are getting a technical.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what a way to lose. Yeah, Chris Webber, you remember that. Yeah, that's way back when. But now, and that's why I said to you, David, they had to know when Alfred brought it in before that they were out of timeout. You couldn't call a timeout. You had to get the ball in. Now, they had coaches on the floor, by the way, when the ball was inbounded. Okay? So that's strange, too. And that's going to be, I guarantee you there's going to be a review on that. But the two-minute report means nothing if you lose by one. All right, so Booker will give him the win with a free throw. And the ball comes in for Phoenix on the side. So just when you thought you had seen everything in an NBA game, came up with a new one.
That's incredible. The Pelicans up 3 at home. Suns, for one thing, you hear them call for the foul because it's a 3-point lead with 6 seconds left. So by the time you would foul, even if it was fouled immediately on the catch, let's say he fouled immediately on the catch, and even if both free throws are made, it's a 1-point game with probably, 5.3 left. Then the ball comes in again, and there's another foul, so you're down to 4.5 at most. And with there being no timeouts on either side at that point, 4 seconds to go full court, needing probably a 3. And that's most likely your ball game. But the Pelicans decide not to foul, and Josh Jackson, of Kansas fame, who is not a great three-point shooter, hits the three to tie, and then the Pelicans call a timeout when they don't have one, which results in a technical foul, which results in a loss. It's incredible that that happened. Now, if you wonder how that affects the old tank standings, Phoenix is now just a half game away from Cleveland for the second and third spots, which they're both going to have the same opportunity at the number one pick. Now, New Orleans, with that loss, is now only a half game away from Dallas, who has the seventh pick. And they're one game away from Washington for the nine. That's the spot where it's interesting. If you wonder where the odds matter the most in terms of them changing, the tanking probably comes in the middle of the lottery because the odds are so much better. That's where they improve the most from the old system to the new system. But seeing that crazy ending made me think of one other just absolutely crazy opportunity. And there's some Bulls ties in here. This is from 06-07. Wizards have a three-point lead on the Raptors, and it involves a former Bull, Michael Ruffin, and a voice that you hear on this station a lot right now.
Well, the Wizards foul down the floor, and it's a deflection by Ruffin. And the play continues. Peterson got it! I don't believe it! Is it going to be Dallas? We got to check it out. If it's good, we're going into overtime. And a Hail Mary three by Mo Pete. I don't believe what I just saw. Onions, baby onions. We have got to find out on a replay.
Sam Mitchell standing right next to us, waiting to see what happens on the monitor.
We have seen some incredible things. Let's look at the replay right here. After a deflection by Ruffin, it went in the air. Peterson, the release, it is good.
It counts.
It is good. We're going into overtime. 109 apiece.
That's incredible. So to set it up, for one thing, obviously that's Chuck Swirsky, who did Raptors games for, I believe it was a decade before coming to Chicago, or it was at least really close to a decade. So Wizards are up three, Raptors inbounding, throw the ball past half court, Michael Ruffin grabs it, and if he had executed properly, it made sense. He wanted to chuck the ball up into the air so the rest of the time would run out. But he didn't have a great grip on the ball, and it barely goes up in the air right into the hands of Mo Pete, Boris Peterson, for those keeping score at home. And he just turns and shoots a three from probably 28, 30 feet and drains it to send it to overtime. That was just the first thing I could think of a finish as crazy as the Suns-Pelican-ish that happened yesterday. Those are the little things that make me smile. It doesn't take a whole lot, but just really weird finishes. And then having Stephen Ngo throw out the old Mo Pete one with Michael Ruffin too. Because, I mean, mind you, when you think of Michael Ruffin, you're thinking of the really, really bad Bulls more likely than anything else. But then I also just really liked Mo Pete as a player. Any guy that has a smooth jumper as a lefty is someone that I'm here for. Shouts to Anthony Peeler and Tony Gill's guy, Michael Redd, but not that much just because Tony thinks Michael Redd should be a Hall of Famer. That's a whole nother thing, one of Tony's many bad takes. He has good ones too. Listen to the No Zones podcast, by the way. Oh, and while I'm on podcast, this is a big week. This is a big week because the March Fatness Bracket is going to come out this week. I believe Jay and I are recording on Tuesday. We have two listeners of the podcast, fellow fats, that are in charge of two of the regions. Jay has a region and I have a region. So Russ is one of the guys. Russ is a P1 of the podcast. So is John, the other guy that has a region. So we're going to put those together. We're going to have a selection show. That'll be the next podcast that comes out. And probably like last year, we'll do the voting on Twitter. So you should be following the I'm Fat podcast at I'm Fat Pod, Jay at Jay Zawoski 670, myself at Rick Camp 670. And because I'm looking at Eli Hershkovich.
And Rick, I got a suggestion for you. That's why we were making such great eye contact over here. I think you got to look through the NCAA tournament bracket, find some of the fatter players in it, and somehow include them inside of it.
That's fair. I might need to lean on you for a little bit of that, but that I'm at least going to point them out when I see them in the tournament. I don't know if there's anybody that's like Oliver Miller level fat, but there's probably a couple guys that are more Khalid El-Amin fat. There's always chunky point guard that's better than he looks like he should be. There's always that guy in the tournament. So I look forward to seeing who that guy is this year. But yes, so by the way, also feel free to text in at 670-11 or tweet me with your suggestions of who I should have in my bracket. It can be a fat person, a fake fat person, a food. I mean, pizza won the whole thing last year. Pizza is the only thing right now in the Onion Ring of Honor. Or a fat accessory. There might be some recycled from last year. You know, it's been a strong year for the remote control, so maybe that'll make its way back into the tournament. So we'll see. 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. So what we'll do is we'll take a timeout, come back, and a couple NFL notes. We'll keep talking about the tournament with you. What do you look forward to on Selection Sunday, also throughout the tournament? And just how do you enjoy it for a town that's honestly not a big college basketball town? We have a lot of alums from different places, so maybe that's how your fandom is decided or how you just fill out a bracket for fun. And maybe some of the stakes that you put on who has the best bracket, who has the worst bracket in terms of your group of friends. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock on The Score. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until the top of the hour. That's when Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Heron come on. A couple suggestions on the text line for fats that should be in my region of March fatness. Santa, Refrigerator Perry, and Tommy Lasorda have come in so far. I don't know that any of them were necessarily on my radar to this point, but they will be added to the pool. So I appreciate that. You can keep texting me at 670-11 there and tweeting me at RickCamp670 with your suggestions. So the selection show will probably be recorded and posted on Tuesday. So started the show talking about it being Selection Sunday and how you go about filling out your bracket, and also just the circumstances around the bracket. Because for me, the bracket is something that I more or less have one at home with my family, and we get everybody involved. So, like, my mom will fill out the bracket and you don't even say the name of the school. So I wouldn't say Duke versus North Carolina. I would say Blue Devils versus Tar Heels. She's a mascot person. Always choose by the mascot. So if there's ever a team with a horse mascot that's halfway decent, they're probably going to end up winning the entire thing. But the fact that it can be the random person that doesn't follow sports that can win the bracket, I do think that kind of brings a little fun to it. Now, when it comes to actually watching the games, I want to see the best talent. So for me, I don't really have a true rooting interest, but I would love to have Zion and Duke and RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish. I'd like to have them in the tournament as long as humanly possible, because I don't truly care who wins the NCAA tournament. I think it's interesting to watch it the entire way, but like, I don't have a rooting interest all the way to the end. So if the best talent is put in pressure situations, I'm all for it. Whether that's Zion, whether it's a guy like, if the Bulls stay around 4 in the lottery, can Cam Reddish put some stuff together and actually be consistent for any point this season? Those are the kind of things that I like looking at, and just getting to see Ja Morant against a higher level of competition is incredibly interesting to me. We spent a lot of the first hour going back and forth with that with Eli of just what to look for, how important it is being a number one seed, even who the one seeds are necessarily going to be. And I do find it fascinating that I feel like there's been less talk about the bubble teams this year because from early on in the season, really once conference season started, there was a lot of talk that, you know, this isn't going to be the strongest set of bubble teams in the world. So I wonder how that's going to affect the selection show, if at all, in terms of ratings, because it seems like that's what we're always looking for. With a the cameras that are on all the bubble teams and the ones that are sitting there despondent after the last few seeds are revealed and the ones that lose their minds when they realize they're a 7 or they're an 11 seed playing against some really good mid-major school.
Just wait. The crew, the selection committee crew on CBS is going to have Bill Self on the show right after Kansas gets pegged as a number 4 seed.
Oh, you mean future Bulls coach Bill Self, apparently?
Exactly.
I don't believe that for a second.
Right. No chance. No chance Bill Self. Well, that again, it would be Bulls, but that's another conversation.
It would
for
also be very Pete Carroll.
That's true, too. Going from NBA or NFL back to college, back to the NFL.
Or just the... Oh, there's some sanctions coming down here. I'm going to get out and go to the professional league.
That's true as well. Kansas is in big trouble from that perspective. They're going to get some wins taken away, to say the least. But Kansas is going to be underseeded in some senses if they get pegged as a 4 because they lost in the Big 12 title game to Iowa State. They've headed down the year. But that is one team, a fade team, in terms of a program that has the notoriety because of the name itself. Just wait. Bill Self is going to be crying on national television when Kansas is a 3 or 4, thinks they should be a higher 3 or 2, maybe even a 5. We'll see how the seeding comes out, and Kansas is going to go down in the first round.
Wow. There it is, right there. I'm trying to remember, who was it? Was it Bucknell that beat Kansas? Yeah, I'm getting the thumbs up from Nick Shepkowski.
And Northern Iowa.
Yeah. I love the video from, what was it, last year or the year before, of Ali Farouk Manesh went back to Kansas to ask about that game and show the video, and then people realized it was him because he had more of an adult haircut at that point. He didn't have
Vermont
the hair flopping
get him
around.
One year?
Did who?
Did Vermont get Kansas 1 year? Who'd Vermont upset? TJ Sorrentine was hitting threes from all over. Was that...
I'm pretty sure Eli's looking it up because he's our college basketball encyclopedia.
Bradley got him back in 06.
That's true. When, you know, Bradley was a team people around here rooted for when they're in the tournament, as opposed to this
when
year.
We were positive about him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now people are rooting. There's a rooting interest involving Bradley, but it's not good for Bradley now. So that, yeah, it's really interesting how all of it's going to, because a team that Eli likes is a team that in Houston, very good team this entire year, but when you talk about Kelvin Sampson to some people, they're just out entirely. So that's part of the reason I find rooting interest in how you determine who you pick in your bracket to be so interesting, because some people go more morality, some people go mascots or just teams that maybe they know people that went to, or just a bunch of upsets, or just say screw it and go chalk, which really isn't any fun. 630 texter with a good suggestion for my region in March Fatness. The electric scooter. Yeah, the Rascal scooter was in the field last year. I don't remember what seed it was, but it's a strong contender. It had a solid year. So I would not be surprised if the Rascal scooter made a return to the March Fatness bracket. 312-644-6767. 670-11 on the text line. Your thoughts going into Selection Sunday, and hopefully everybody at this point is, if you're someone that just partakes in all the main days, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. And since Brendan McCaffrey is not here anymore, on the air, I'll put out the disclaimer for him, St. Pat D's Day with D's instead of Patty's Day with T's. T's bad, D's good. In terms of St. Patrick's Day. So that's your disclaimer for when you put your apparently obligatory Facebook post out and you're going with the abbreviation Paddy with 2 D's instead of 2 T's. So that's out there for everybody. And be safe. If you weren't this weekend to this point, be safe now. Don't get yourself in, don't be the guy that looks like St. Patrick's Day going into work on Monday. because it's going to be so blatantly obvious, and people probably like me are going to be looking for it just to point and laugh. So have your fun, be safe for yourself and everybody else around you. And I got a couple texts that were not happy that I was me and brought up something that happened in the NBA. It was weird. It was something weird that happened. I am perfectly fine bringing up oddities that happen in sports. It just so happened this one was in a basketball game that probably three people watched. Phoenix and New Orleans, not exactly hotbeds for NBA basketball, but I'm trying to think of a finish more odd than that recently, college side or NBA side, in terms of basketball. I mean, the Mo Pete was the one that came to mind, and I know it came to the mind of Stefan Ngo as well, because he's the one that tweeted out the Mo Pete video. But yeah, that's one of the weirdest ways to lose. And if the Pelicans end up winning the lottery, that you got to look back on that game and be like, they tanked the hell out of that, and I appreciate them for it. Robert Tractor Trailer, rest in peace, is someone else that's also been thought of for the tournament. He actually works for regular tournament and also March Fatness. A lot of guys that are involved in March Fatness need the old RIP after them. Couldn't imagine why if they're in a tournament about fat things. But yeah, Robert Tractor Trailer, who was traded on draft night for Dirk Nowitzki. Solid deal for the Mavs. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. Tommy Bahama shirts. Those have come up. That's a solid choice as well. I think we're getting better about having bigger shirts that aren't necessarily Hawaiian shirts. So I appreciate that from a fat perspective of having more options. Now, if we could get more affordable options, that would be great. Because when you're fat, you need to spend the money on food, so you don't have as much in terms of being able to buy, you know, proper clothing that makes you look like an adult. But as I go back and just think about the bracket today, because I'll be here for it. I've admitted I'm not a hardcore college basketball guy throughout the season. So a lot of what happens in the tournament, guys that you hear of name wise or teams, it's going to be either a first or more than just a cursory way of looking at these teams. And I have fun with the brackets. I very rarely ever win them, but I still find it fun to go through the exercise and essentially just get to know different teams, different systems. That's where I like seeing who's doing something different that makes them maybe better than the sum of their talent. Who's the next up-and-coming coach? Something along those lines. Or who's the coach that kind of resurrected their career a bit? I mean, Kelvin Sampson was gone for a long time and now has continued Houston's rise to the fact where they are a legitimate team. Earlier in the show, you heard Eli mention that Houston at 33-1 is a team that you should maybe keep an eye on. See what happens, to see where they end up, and maybe take action accordingly. So you should be following Eli on Twitter at Eli Hershkovich. He's also going to be here tonight. He's going to be back in the building after Bulls Kings, so probably around 7:30-ish until 10 o'clock with Jordan Stone breaking down the bracket. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. A couple NFL notes before I go, because I know Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron are going to, I mean, anytime you have Anthony in the building, Anthony's got thoughts on anything that you're going to be talking about, but especially on NFL. I mean, come on. So I just find it interesting looking at how the Bears attack free agency. And I know it was mentioned in the Trib today by Rich Campbell, how they've really, it's once again, finding a new way to double down on Mitch Trubisky, that the biggest thing the Bears did is trust their own internal development. Why is Eli yelling about Iowa basketball? I mean, like, I'm good doing these last couple minutes, but Shep
Big
puts
Ant walked
on,
in, so Eli had to drop a bomb on Iowa basketball.
Jeez.
Give us thoughts that you're going to hear all night tonight on these airwaves.
Eli's such a hateful guy.
Iowa grad on the other side. I have plenty to go off on about Iowa today. Can't wait.
After Bulls, about 7:30 till 10 o'clock. That's the heat you're going to get from Eli. He's going to rip Iowa, like Iowa. I assume probably rip Iowa, judging by his tone and the fact that, boy, Eli's just such a negative person all the time that, you know, he's always there to rip on any team. That's not really true, but you should be really here all day because, as I mentioned, I'm here for another couple minutes. Then Shep and Anthony Heron are here for 9 to noon. Noon to 4 is Herb Lawrence and Kevin Zipak. David Schuster's bridging the gap to Bulls basketball, then Bulls at Kings. And after that, the bracket will be released in the midst of the Bulls game. So you should have the selection show on, but volume down. And then when you do that, have the Bulls game on so you can hear the Bulls on the score. And then keep it tuned after that for Eli and Jordan Stone. And it's the only thing I'm looking forward to seeing outside of who the number one seeds are is, for me personally, I kind of want to see where Buffalo is, being a guy that went to a MAC school, seeing the one MAC team that's actually going to be in the tournament and possibly matter. Buffalo's had a really good year, even though they lost at the buzzer at NIU. So Buffalo's a team that I'm looking forward to seeing. So what we're going to do is take a timeout, come back. Oh, we're going to do transition. Let's go. Shep and Anthony Heron coming in next on The Score.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Crichton community. Many of you bring binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. I got to look up in the tree. Who else seen the leprechaun say yeah? Yeah!
Eyewitnesses say the leprechaun only comes out at night. If you shine a light in its direction, it suddenly disappears. Others just came to get lucky in hopes a pot of gold may be buried under this tree.
I'm going to run a backhoe and uproot that tree. I want to know where the gold is. I want the gold. Give me the gold. I want the gold.
This is Brian Johnson, NBC 15 News.
We're the Southside Irish, as our fathers were before.
God, that's...
We come from the Windy City.
Is that the best Irish video for a non-big time holiday, like a non-Christmas Thanksgiving holiday?
Fatness?
Yeah.
But if you did a bracket for best YouTube videos of all time,
that's
not going to be a number one seed.
No, but
that's
going to
be your sleeper
five.
That's knocking on the door of a Final Four appearance.
That's so
that
good.
That is one of the all-time.
I was introduced to a video from a... It's like, I think it's MSNBC has that, whatever one of those prison shows are that they do. There was one called the Booty Warrior that I found fairly entertaining. If anyone out there is familiar with the Booty Warrior, or if you're not, that may be worth a Google search.
Yeah, all right.
The Booty Warrior.
Booty
he comes
Warrior.
Off the bench
yeah.
and buries threes and,
yeah.
and replaces
yeah,
Steph Curry.
Yeah.
He spells him
it's the
a couple
Jordan
minutes.
Jordan Bohannon of, yeah. of YouTube videos for Eli back there.
Well, welcome back in. I'm Rick Camp, and in the studio now, you obviously hear Anthony Heron and Nick Shepkowski. They are going to be here till noon. And yeah, that video is perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. And every St. Patrick's Day, I have to watch it. Every St. Patrick's Day when I get up, it's like...
Look at you in your green, by the way.
Like that?
It's very St. Patty's of you.
It is.
Yeah.
Nikki O'Shepkowski, Nikki O'Shep,
so.
And Tony O'Haron today.
I totally
with you
forgot
from
about
9
it.
Until 1, or
yeah,
9 until noon.
I completely forgot about it, and I think I'm technically a quarter Irish.
Huh.
Like, my mom's maiden name is McHale.
Okay.
So that's about as Irish as it gets.
Your brother's
Give me
Kevin.
The gold. I
yeah.
want the gold.
Yeah, and then the way I choose my shirt in the morning is whichever one is in the right
Clean?
Drawer. Yeah.
Oh.
And is on the top of the one in the drawer. I don't set it up at all special, so
he
it's just
lie.
Like I'll get into work sometimes because I'm up really early. I have to be here by 6, so I'm leaving my house by like 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I'll get in here, take off my coat and be like, oh, this is what I'm wearing today.
There you
okay.
go.
Okay. that's really it.
I don't know if I've heard a segment on this station in some time that fits someone more than what happened roughly 45 minutes ago on
yeah.
these very airwaves.
It's true.
When I'm finishing my drive-in and Campy comes back from break after teasing something NBA-related, NBA tank-related, I'm like, oh, is it Bulls-wise? I'm like, I didn't really watch much of the Bulls this weekend because, well, that Clippers thing, why would you, besides Doc Rivers and Boylan throwing down? I'm like, what is he talking about? What is he getting to? And the fact that you had the sound from a Pelican, I had to look at my notes to remember the teams. The Pelicans and Suns on a Sunday morning, and you actually had reason to discuss it that made plenty of sense as well. Yeah. Then straight into some I'm Fat podcast discussion as well. I don't think anything fits a host as much as that segment fit Rick Camp.
Pelican Suns, huh?
Like, yeah. I mean, so the,
it was
so
the, Chris Webber coming back for more. That's an all-time stupid move.
It's incredible. So the Pelicans are up three at home. Suns got the ball, 6 seconds left. No timeouts on either side. So you figure the logical move would be Pelicans foul. All
right.
Well, they let the Suns get the ball in, and Josh Jackson hits a three to tie the game with just over a second left.
Okay.
So the Pelicans take a timeout. So it's a little confusing. There's some chaos on the court because the Pelicans had no timeouts left. This is already in overtime, so we're looking at two OTs.
They do not have. Okay.
So Devin Booker hits the free throw, and the Suns win.
And all of a sudden, the Suns
they're only like a half game away from the Cavs for the third spot in the lottery. Right. So it was just unbelievable. So then it made me think of, and Stefan Noah tweeted it after this happened, the Michael Ruffin trying to chuck the ball into the air when he was a member of the Wizards and kind of let it roll off the end of his fingers. And Mo Pete just catch, turn, and drains a three to send it to overtime. And play-by-play guy at the time, Chuck Swirsky, losing his mind. It was fantastic.
One of the all-time oddest, strangest beats that only you see in the NBA. I know I'm not usually hype guy. Like, I'm usually anti, if someone gets hyped up and loved and all the praise, I find something to knock the guy for. I'm all in on Zion. Man, the last three nights are just, I can't enjoy that guy enough.
He's,
like,
he's on one-name status at this point already.
He's 18 or 19 years old, right now, freshman in college, about. Completely on a one-name basis, and it's like, I hate being that guy, but I can't get enough of Duke basketball in this. I hope that they are playing the final Monday of the tournament.
He single-handedly made Duke basketball fun and readable. Yes. I mean, just as soon as a year ago, it was the last 20 years of Duke basketball, 20-plus years, have been where they were so
slap
easy
the
to
floor
hate.
White guy Greg Paulus tripping you.
And Eli would have been right there just railing against Duke and kind of leading the charge against it. And here we are with Zion Williamson, and he has made Duke basketball rootable.
And
he's made folks want to watch them.
Right. He's so good that Coach K can't even screw it up. Because if you think about some of the really talented top guys that he's had, I mean, at least for college, Jabari Parker could have been a lot more than just standing in the corner hitting some threes.
Yeah, I don't know.
In college, against college talent.
Yeah.
That's
learned a little bit about Jabari once you watch him up close.
Oh, 100%. He still loves the Great Lakes, but, you know, just not dealing with them anymore. And
I thought Krzyzewski was a complete idiot in that situation when who'd they lose to? Norfolk State or someone bad as a 15? And I was like, okay, well, that's dumb.
Mercer and Lehigh.
Okay. Norfolk State was Mizzou, I think. Mizzou lost as a 2-15 game a few years ago. But, yeah, I remember thinking the same exact thing. But then after kind of seeing Jabari start here to his NBA career, like, maybe the hype wasn't so merited.
He didn't know what to do with Brandon Ingram either. Brandon Ingram was a guy that was begging for more space, and Coach K was not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was the college game and just the nature of it, but he was just not interested. But yeah,
Corey Maggette. I mean, there's been plenty of guys you kind of feel like
sixth man.
More in college.
Like, I like how the three-pointer, I think it makes basketball more exciting. I know some of the old basketball heads, well, that's not basketball. Why are you rewarded if you can't get the ball inside? Why you should be rewarded for shooting from longer away? You don't get more points for a field goal that's 50 yards. Why should you get a field goal? Okay. I get that argument a little, but I enjoy watching Duke play and seeing a team that's just different compared to everyone else right now of It's a minor miracle if they are hitting threes. Like, it's happened so few times this year. There's a Virginia game earlier this year where they shot lights out from beyond the arc. But seeing a team with that much talent, and the talent doesn't involve three-point shooting, is just unique in this day and age.
Just think how good they'd be and unbeatable if Cam Reddish actually shot the ball well this year. Because that was the thought coming in was R.J. Barrett was going to be the pure scorer. Zion was going to do all the little stuff and then also just be a crazy athlete. And Cam Reddish was the guy that tied it all together by being the almost like a Klay Thompson type of, in theory, of not as high usage and just hit the shots and give space for Barrett and Zion. That's what he should have been.
But I mean, R.J. Barrett is Eli's guy. Eli told me as little as, like, what, 3 weeks ago or so that he would take R.J. Barrett over Zion Williamson if he had the first pick in the NBA draft.
I'll admit that.
Okay.
I don't think he's crazy, though.
I think you are. I think you're insane.
Coming into the year, that was the consensus. Coming into the year, before we had seen Zion against,
but then we had seen him, and it's just like, God.
But with Cam Reddish, though, Duke was hugging him like he was a walk-on yesterday. After he hit that three against Florida State, Rick, he's been so bad.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know he's been so bad. That's what I'm saying is, just think if he was actually playing up to what people thought he could have been, then how unbeatable is this Duke team? I mean,
they're easily the favorite to win right now.
Yeah,
you're entering. They're probably the one of one seeds going into the night. I don't think after their weekend, it's tough to argue against that. But yeah, it's a team that. It's going to be a fun tournament because if Duke is your one of ones, if Duke is your favorite, like because of their lack of three-point shooting, is that going to catch up with them at some point? Like it damn near did against North Carolina. It should have.
Yes.
If Barrett plays like he did in that Carolina game on Friday night, Duke's not long for this tournament. He tried to hand that thing away how many times?
Right.
I was just like, oh, I forgot that number one's on our team and posted up and has a guy that's 6'4 trying to defend him and I'm not going to get him the ball. Like how many times that happened and he's taken an outside shot? So it should be a fun tournament just because there's your difference between your probably 1 through 12 top teams in this thing is not that great compared to years past.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see how many teams can truly win this thing because it sure seems like the depth, it just isn't quite there as much in this tournament. Like, I've never heard for most of the season a bubble spoken about as negatively as this one.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Of just like, well, you know, who? Not necessarily who cares because that's how, of course, you always try and keep viewership in all the mid-major conference finals of just being like, well, is a bid going to get stolen? I don't know. Let's see if Bowling Green can beat Buffalo, you know, something along those lines. It's the only way they keep interest in it. But yeah, it just seems like when you hear there's no absolutely pounding the table, this team absolutely needs to be in. Now, maybe there's an unexpected team that we think is in that won't and that'll cause it. But as projections look now, it just seems like it's what kind of very flawed team do you want?
Right. And like you're kind of missing, sometimes you get the marquee names at least that are on the bubble. And Indiana's probably the closest thing to that this year. Mm-hmm. And they go out and they lay an egg against Ohio State in the, round of 10, I think, or whatever it was in the Big Ten
the
tournament.
Second round.
Yeah, it's so confusing when you have like the bye and then another bye. It's like, well, round you call it. Is it the second round if half the teams haven't played yet? It feels like you're like playing for entry into the tournament.
But yeah, I did think Indiana was going to show up more than they did. They won
they
four
played
games
well
in
the last couple,
And Ohio State was just getting Caleb Wesson back, so you weren't sure what they were going to look like, and they played horribly in the three games without him after blowing out Iowa. In the fourth game, that the final game Caleb Wesson played in the regular season, they blow out the Hawkeyes, and you got the whole blow up with Fran McCaffrey and the officials, and then you lose Caleb Wesson for a few games, and Ohio State looked terrible, obviously, without their best player going into the Big Ten tournament. They okay, they get their bye. Here comes Indiana. They won four in a row, and yeah, the Hoosiers laid a major egg in Ohio State. They solidified themselves into the tournament because they were really a bubble team. Also, it was kind of the bubble bowl was that particular game. Whoever wins that puts themselves in great shape. Whoever loses it is going to be possibly sitting at home sitting at home thinking that they're probably not going to make the tournament, and that's where Indiana is right now.
So how do you fill out your brackets? Are you going to be an Iowa all the way guy just because?
No. I do think that I was telling the Iowa hater on the other side of the glass that I do think matchup-wise Iowa's going to present some problems for people because it's one thing for Iowa to play Big Ten teams and see them, see the majority of them twice every season,
sure.
You game plan for it, you're accustomed to the McCaffrey offensive sets. You're accustomed to the length that they present. You know, you start playing these teams who never see you. And Iowa's a really long team. They've got like 9 different guys that can score. And, you know, defensively, they may or may not show up. But what's consistent when Fran McCaffrey's on the sideline for Iowa is that they can score the ball. So I could see them as a Sweet 16 team. They're not going any further than that. But okay. I could see them as a Sweet 16 team.
Who's a local team that actually has a chance in this thing? Like, is there the Michigan-Michigan State game today? Maybe you're playing for a 1 seed in that if Michigan State ends up winning. Is that what the best bet is? We if you're looking need, at local Big Ten-ish
I was
going
to say,
teams?
We might need to redefine local to get to
yeah.
that.
Right. It's Big Ten. It's a huge alumni base
still hold
here
that
anyway.
Hope for the ball.
But yeah.
I mean, the only thing I know that I'm rooting for is Wisconsin to be out ASAP. Because
really?
I just hate watching them play.
They're just consistent, man.
They are.
Like,
they're,
they had the I, one like, year with Greg
brand.
Guard when he, yeah.
oh,
like, it's just, like,
on
one
brand.
Year that they were kind of down. And like, all right, yep, they're going to miss Bo Ryan. And then, oh, same old Wisconsin team. There you go, finishing the top 4 in the conference. Just
because they
that's
do their
what
thing.
They do for the last 20 years.
Yeah, they're good. Like, they're good. Don't get me wrong. But I just.
They're the Virginia of the Midwest.
They really are.
Like,
they
maybe not
talented.
To that extreme, but they are the Virginia of the Midwest.
It's so bad. I just. I don't want to watch.
It's not an exciting brand of basketball. It's
a lot of charges.
That,
if you like offensive fouls,
man.
You're going to love the Badgers if you haven't watched them until March Madness.
They are great at taking charges, blending into the floor, and like that. Like they have a lot of guys. Ethan Happ's big. He's like first team all blend into the floor type of white.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he is to me. But what do you guys have coming up today?
We're going to have a visit with Jerry Palm, break down some brackets, break down some bracket projections with us at 10 o'clock today. Nobody does it better than him. Jeff Bassian from MLB.com, talk some Cubs at 10:40. And then 11 o'clock, Matt Verderame, going to break down the NFL free agency period, what the Bears have done, what others have done, and react to that a little bit.
All right. Jeff,
what did you do? What did you guys do? What nice things did you have to say about Bradley today? Anything? Because I know that's what we're supposed to do. Bradley's asking and requesting for compliments and to be fans of the program. So what nice thing did you say about Bradley basketball today?
They sent out a tweet that had no punctuation or spelling errors.
All right.
Nice. All
right. That's
impressive.
That's about it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they get their brains beat in. They get announced and they are, I know that the first round and you get the Missouri Valley fun that a lot of locals like to have.
Yeah, whatever.
And take that, but I hope they get obliterated.
Right.
I was hoping for Loyola to go on a run last year. I am hoping the complete opposite. Yeah. I hope they lose by 35 in round
this
one.
This was the perfect setup for random team that isn't as good as Loyola, just to have a bigger backing because of everybody remembering Loyola last year, maybe taking more of a vested interest. And boy, did they flush that down the toilet right quick. I mean, that was impressive that you're the only Illinois team from the state of Illinois.
There's so much good to go of it.
Yes.
You have the Loyola thing from last year. You're from the conference that had last year's Cinderella darling. You upset them and knocked them out of the Missouri Valley tournament. You go and win that tournament. Heck, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you're a team that's winning 5 or 6 games in a regular season. It's a great story. Why do you have to go and just...
And now everybody's rooting hard against you.
Right. Like, you know
state.
How hard it is to pull that off just because, like, you want... Oh, you're a beat writer? You got to be a fan of the program. Get the hell out of here.
Right.
You're Bradley basketball.
Yeah.
Get your brain
media
beat in round
and
one.
PR are two different things.
Right.
You need your PR because of how poorly you treated the media. That's exactly what it comes down to.
And so the quote from the coach, was it said directly to the beat writer? Like,
is that his boss, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the story that they asked to meet with his boss? And he hasn't been positive about this team. We don't like what he's had to say this year.
Right.
Like, well, you started extremely slow. Regular season-wise, you finished right in the middle of the pack in the Missouri Valley.
I mean,
it's like
surprisingly
right
won the tournament.
Right.
So what would you like said? We were surprised you won. Would you like us to act like you were the favorite?
You haven't been to the tournament since, what, 06 when they beat Kansas, it was?
Yeah.
I think that was the last time that they actually danced. Like, it
was
hasn't been a program
was
with
that
a lot.
Patrick O'Brien?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
And he
after
was
they,
a bust
oh,
in the
God,
NBA.
Yeah.
I think he was Warriors.
Who's that going to be this year? Who's the Tyrus Thomas, Patrick Bryant of this tournament that gets overdrafted and turns out to be absolutely nothing?
Any
guesses for that one?
Let's see.
That's always a fun playing in either Final Four weekend or like on the Elite Eight Saturday and Sunday, and you're like, this guy's great. His draft stock's skyrocketing. He's going to be awesome. And
seems like so much of your top talent so concentrated.
It really is.
I can see Carson Edwards of Purdue perhaps laying an egg, because when Purdue's offense is rolling, it's when Carson Edwards shoots less. He led the Big Ten in scoring this year, but when their offense is at its best, it's when he's taking 20 shots or less. Problem is, Matt Painter says, Carson, I trust you to decide whatever's best, and more often than not, Carson decides that him shooting is what's best. So when he's shooting 25 to 30 shots, their offense doesn't do as well. Now, they will win games with their defense also. The Purdue, to me, is a squad. They got to at least make the Sweet 16. They're one of the better teams, not only in the Big Ten, but they've got depth, they've got health. They got a lot of things on their side, and they've got some other players who've started to emerge here as the season's gone on. So they should at least make the Sweet 16, if not beyond, if Carson Edwards plays more of a well-rounded brand of basketball, and it's not just, I'm ball stopper, I'm doing my
Trae
Young
thing
from last
year. I'm shooting 4 of 22 or whatever it was the other day against Minnesota.
He can hit from 30 feet, but he just does it too damn much. He doesn't need to shoot it from that deep often, but that's what he falls into.
Big Ant is drinking that Big Ten Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
His Final Four is going to be Michigan State, Iowa, Purdue.
Purdue's getting upset, Anthony. I'm going to lay that out there right now.
That was why I put his name out there, though. The answer to Campy's question is the guy who could fall flat is Carson Edwards in Purdue.
Sure.
Eli just hates. If you're a team close to here, close to Chicago.
Unless it's DePaul. He'll carry your water if it's DePaul.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Eli loves carrying water for DePaul. That's right. All right, well, looking forward to the show, guys. I'll be listening on my trek back home.
New home for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's going to be.
That is a stressful time, but it's a rewarding time.
Yeah, we close on the 25th. So we got 8 days left, and then I will be a resident of Lombard instead of Geneva, which is going to be great.
How much does that knock off the commute?
Oh, my God. Okay. It's great. And I'm going to be able to take the train in Monday through Friday.
Nice. Geneva's just a pain to get to from the highway.
It is. It's a great place.
It's an awesome town, but in terms of convenience, to get there from the highway, still driving down whatever the heck of road that is.
Probably get off at Farnsworth at the outlet mall there, and take that forever. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. So, and also it just means that not this coming week, but the week after, I got 3 of the 5 days off, which I'm bad about taking time off strategically. So it'll be good.
Awesome.
Hopefully.
Well, it'll be a good time for you and Colleen. It'll be fun, and it'll be an exciting time. So don't let us stress you out too much. Try to enjoy part of it.
We'll see. All right, have a good show, guys.
Thanks, Campy.
Thanks, Camp.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.